But the thing is, he says he got it initially from no one. He went out to preach it, and he was already known to be preaching it the first time he showed up in Jerusalem. Though most didn't see him, they heard he's preaching the faith he once tried to destroy.
Right.
So he's been preaching some gospel, and yet we in 1 Corinthians 15, if this is really Paul, we're being told the saving truth he gave to the Corinthians. He got from other people, and if we identify that with any of these meetings in Galatians, we just have two different accounts. He either got it as a revelation from Christ and no human intermediary, or he was given it by these eyewitnesses, supposedly.
But Bob, I'm asking, what is wrong with Furnish's suggestion?
It's blatant harmonization. It's like saying Peter denied Jesus six times.
Oh, wait a minute. Paul's the one who does the harmonization.
No, he's not. I'm afraid that's your buddy Furnish.
Okay, no, listen. We haven't mentioned this yet. In Galatians chapter 1, Paul says, I got it from the Lord. Next step. I didn't talk to anybody about it. I went up for 3 years. Very next verse, I went to Jerusalem to talk. So Paul's the one who says, God gave it to me. I discussed it with nobody. Whoops, I'm up in Jerusalem and I'm talking. What I mean is Paul's the one who says, got it. Didn't say anything. Later I said something. I take it since Paul's the one who tells us that, Paul thinks it's harmonizable.
Well, no, my point is that Galatians is self-consistent. The howling contradiction is between anything in Galatians and 1 Corinthians 15.
I don't understand why that's a contradiction, Bob. I've looked at a number of commentaries on the...
Oh, they all do the same spinning. I looked at them, too. I just can't believe that they feel they must harmonize. So many commentaries on the Pauline epistles are almost nothing but harmonizations, even within the same letter. Gina, how the heck did Paul have in mind to get from this verse to that verse? Well, I tend to think nothing, because it's a patchwork quilt of fragments from various authors. They say, oh, no, Paul must have written it come hell or high water. There can't be the interpolations, it's all unitary authorship, and so somehow he must get from one to the other, and no matter what kind of gymnastics we have to do, we'll do them, and I just don't have the patience for that anymore. I just think that, no, these things do not agree.
Well, I'm not into gymnastics at all, really, and you'd probably be surprised at some of my responses to the purported discrepancies in the resurrection narratives. What I see what's going on in Galatians is when Paul's saying he received the gospel message from God, he didn't get it from man. He's not only talking about the fact that the general gospel message of the saving value of Christ's death, that he was the Messiah, but he is also referring to the fact that the Gentiles, that this salvation is available to the Gentiles. And when we see this going on in Galatians, and he's going up, and some of to Jerusalem, and some of the controversies that are taking place, it's about the Gentiles. If Acts 15 is what Paul's referring to when he goes up to Jerusalem 14 years later, they're talking about the Gentiles. Can he go to the Gentiles and talk to them and share the gospel? When he comes back, and it's Galatians chapter 2, he rebukes Peter to his face, because when he's there with the Gentiles, he's fine. But then when the Jews show up on the spot, then he pulls himself away from the Gentiles. So I see when he's talking about gospel, it's not only just the content, but it's to whom it is now available. And the fact that he's saying this thing, this creed, this formalized material that Paul said, what I received, I handed down to you, and this is the gospel we preach. What's really interesting is when you look at, and I know you're aware of this, but when you look at the first couple of verses of 1 Corinthians 15, he says, you know, I'm going to make known to you, here it comes, I'm going to make known to you the gospel that I preach to you, and he uses the term euangelizomai there, for preaching the good news. But then later on, in verse 12, when he says, hey, this is the gospel we preached, or this is the stuff that we gave to you, he uses the word keruso, or kerugma, for the kerygma, that formalized official proclamation of the gospel that was coming. So that makes a whole lot of sense to say, okay, Paul says, I'm going to give you the gospel that I already preached to you. Here it's coming. And then he gives this creed, this formalized material, and then immediately after it, he says, this is the kerygma that we preach to you. this formalized. So I just don't see any contradictions. I don't think this is gymnastics or maneuver.
Sure it is. I mean, is that what kerygma means whenever it occurs in the New Testament, a formalized statement?
Well, not every time, but here...
Well, it just does here because it has to, because
no,
we're in
no,
trouble
Bob,
if it doesn't.
Bob Dird, you have this in other contexts as well, but this makes really neat sense because what he did, these two different words he's using...
That's like the lambs tend my sheep, agape phileo thing John 21. It's just synonyms.
I would agree with that. With the John 21, I've looked at the commentaries on that. You got people like Keener, you got people like F.F. Bruce, even these conservative scholars who will say, yeah, these are synonyms. They're being used interchangeably. In fact, because John also, you know, has, Peter says, you know, oida, you know, Lord, you know all things, and you know, gnosko, that I love you. So, yeah, he's doing that little literary rhetorical thing there in the passage. The question is he doing it here in 1 Corinthians 15?
And it's only to get out of the conflict with Galatians that we would posit he is.
Well, I don't think so. Again, if we take that as being not only the content, but to whom that he's talking to in Galatians, and we see it in the context of Galatians as well as this visit in Acts 15, it seems pretty clear, at least to me, that he is talking about the issue is the gospel. Who is it available to? It's not only the content, but who are the recipients who are able to get this?
But if it's the content at all, my point remains, because he does say the gospel I preached is no gospel of man.
Bob, I when we talk about this harmonizing thing in Galatians chapter 1, I when Paul is the one, not evangelicals, not when Paul strings together 1:16 Galatians, then 1:17, then 1:18, then just a few verses later 2:1. Paul's the one who's putting this all in the narrative. And when Paul says, I got it from the Lord, I didn't go anywhere, don't think I ran up there and talked to the apostles, I'm an apostle on my own, you know, I got this from the Lord. Then, when my apprenticeship was over, as it were, now he doesn't say that, but what I mean is Paul does say, I talked to nobody. Then, two verses later, all right, time to talk to somebody. Seems to me that not now, but then... you know, you can't do a master's degree till you do a bachelor's degree. Seems to me Paul's got stages here, nobody's inventing a harmonization. Paul himself says, I think we're putting too much on it when Paul says, I didn't talk to anybody. I got this from the Lord. If we were to be strict about this, he can never go see an apostle. He can never exchange views because he says, this is from the Lord. I don't give a rip what you guys think.
But no, I'm not trying to say that. I don't see any problem within Galatians.
But then, okay, if there's no problem in Galatians, and Paul, I don't want to say it's a now you see me, now you don't, but Paul's saying clearly, I'm not going to talk to you now, because my apprenticeship has begun. I'm alone with the Lord for 3 years.
That I doubt, too, by the way. Why isn't that simply a reference to his preaching among the Nabataeans, which got King Aretas mad
well,
at him?
Well, the only problem with that is that we don't know what he was doing. He just said he was alone, he was alone with the Lord for 3 years. If we put events in there, we're making things up. I mean,
No, I'm just getting from Luke and where's it, 2 Corinthians, that he had some run-in with the king of the Nabataean Arabs.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, where do we put it? But all I'm saying is he said, I think Paul is driving a wedge between what he got from the Lord, so he doesn't have to be instructed of anybody, because the Lord himself gave him the gospel. And now, after X amount of years, whatever else he was doing, let's put it this way, if he was preaching during those first 3 years, I assume he was preaching the gospel, the outlines there in Galatians 1, and he got it from the Lord. But the point is, the only point I'm trying to make is, whatever he was doing during that first 3 years, he says, I didn't run up to get patted on the head and told I was being a good boy by those who were being apostles before me, because after all, I got this from the Lord. He called me specially. And then 3 years later, I'm going to go up there and see what they're about. And then again, in Galatians 2, he does it again, and then depending on what you do with Acts 15, it's either a second trip or a third trip. But my point is, there can hardly be a discrepancy between Paul saying what the Lord gave him and what he was instructed by others, because he himself does the 1-2 sequence and says they both come. So unless he's so dumb that he doesn't know two verses later that he just contradicted something he just said, I think he would plainly say, guys,
there's not a contradiction there. He says, I got my preached message from the message I preach from the Lord, and I decided to set it before them to see what they would have to say, and they had no problem. I don't see a contradiction there.
Okay.
It's just I see a contradiction with any of that in 1 Corinthians 15, where he says he got his gospel that he preaches from other people, and we're assuming it's one of these visits to Jerusalem. I'm saying it cannot have been if he got it from the Lord, not from any human agency. And this idea that it was just a formal thing, like an apostle's creed, in effect, that just seems to me a desperate reading in. Why would he, why introduce that in 1 Corinthians 15 if the point simply is, you remember what I preached to you, that Jesus rose from the dead? How can anybody doubt the future resurrection if you accepted that?
That's a good point, but I think that's a real good point. But I think Paul, being the student that he is, three times in 1 Corinthians, if we take the text straightforward, three times in 1 Corinthians, he tells the Corinthians, I gave you the tradition I was given. Three times. Now, Paul, being a good student, if we can accept what Acts says about Gamaliel and so on, he at least...
I doubt we can, but...
Okay. But just a minute ago, you like Luke and Acts, so I mean,
I just said the only evidence we have at all about Arabia is in there, and so we rather than.
But you're not going to interpret a primary source, Paul, by a secondary source, Luke, are you?
No, I'm just saying all the evidence we have, little though it is preferable to saying, well, he must have had some kind of. Elijah or Moses retreat in the desert for 3 years. No text says that.
Well, Paul himself says, I was with the Lord for 3 years. That's all I'm talking about there. I don't know if he was preaching.
In Galatians?
Yeah, Galatians chapter 1.
In Arabia.
Yeah, because for 3 years,
I went away into Arabia, and again I returned to Damascus.
I think he's usually taken to be saying there that the Lord... I was instructed by the Lord, not the apostles. I think he wants his readers to think, I don't know, is it a human thing? Is it not a human thing? I don't think he wants the readers to think Paul is a derivative. Paul has a derivative message. Because that's why he takes great pains to say, I got it from Jesus.
That's why he can't have written this thing in 1 Corinthians 15.
Well, okay, if that's true, Bob, if it's that simple, why does he go up to Jerusalem in Galatians chapter 2, verse 2, and subject his gospel to them?
Well, because of the I'd have to admit I do tie that in with Acts 15, I think that the going up by revelation is intended as a way one of the prophets in the community must have said, look, the only way we're going to settle this thing between the circumcision party and you is to have you go up to Jerusalem to hash it out.
My point is this. Why isn't the contradiction that you see so insolvable? Why doesn't that keep him? Why doesn't he say to the guy who gives him the revelation, Paul, the Lord told me you need to go up to Jerusalem? No way. The Lord called me to be. What I mean is, why should he cave in Galatians 2 if he hasn't caved in Galatians 1? Seems to me at some point, Galatians 2:2 is very hard to get away from. Paul says, at face value, I went up there, basically set my gospel on the table, and said, give it to me, guys, is this the right thing or not? Mm-hmm. And they said in verse 6, they added nothing to me. 9 and 10, they said, go out, brother, you're doing the same thing we are. Now, my question is, if it's the great discrepancy that you see it is, I cannot understand how Paul puts himself under their authority in 2:2.
Oh, well, it's because he has to answer to a constituency. He's talking about an issue that's arisen within the community,
which is
divided, and they're forcing him to seek arbitration.
Yeah, but he says in 2:2, to see if I was running in vain.
Yeah, and of course, suppose they had told him he was, what do you think would have happened?
I don't know, but that's irrelevant. My point is this. Why does he want them to tell him you're not running in vain? If he is not dependent on them, and this comes totally from the Lord, you could say, well, he cares what Peter thinks because he doesn't want the church to be split up. Okay, that gives him some very nice motive.
Which has happened, and that's the occasion for Galatians.
Okay, but my point is, why do you ever, if your point, as many scholars think, I don't really care on this, but as many scholars think, Paul was trying at some point to say, hey, I have my own authority here, it's not derived from Peter. If that's his point in Galatians 1, Why do you go up to Jerusalem and say, guys, I'm putting myself at your mercy. Here's the gospel I discuss. Please, tell me if I've blown it. That's awfully humbling. And if
he, I'm just saying that if the Sitzim Laban is that he was stuck doing it.
Great. Fantastic. But here's what we agree on. He did it. Now, if he does that before he goes to Corinth, which is clear, right? This event in Galatians 2:2, 14 years later, happens before his trip to Corinth, about 51-52 A.D. He's already made this Sitzim Laban. He's already made this, you guys tell me, am I right on the money or not? And they say, you are. And he goes, yeah, goody, you think I am. If he's going to expose himself to that, and now he's got the big apostles on his side. Don't forget, he has the discussion of 1 Corinthians 15, whether it's Peter, whether it's Apollos, whether it's me, we're not enemies, we're all on the same side. Okay, it helps him clearly to say, Peter, James, the brother of Jesus, and John confirm my message. But to say he wouldn't quote them, or, you know, if he wouldn't quote them, why is he saying earlier, Peter has got his share, and I've got mine, and Apollos has got mine, but don't miss the point. We're all doing this for the kingdom. I
wouldn't see any inconsistency there, and you've put that very well. It's the narrow but fundamental difference that in 1 Corinthians 15, in the beginning, we have this autobiographical statement that he received his gospel from others, and there's no way to square that with anything in Galatians, even these conciliar consultation things. Nothing is said about that.
All right,
nothing was added to him, he says.
Sorry for bringing this up. I mean, seriously, but back to Furnesh again. What he says in the first two verses of 1 Corinthians 15, I came and I preached the gospel, the death. You know, Jesus is a special person. He's got these titles. He died for his sins. He was raised from the dead. That's the gospel I preached to you, and if you believed it, you're a Christian, and if you didn't, you're not. That's 15:1 and 2. Then in 15:3, he says, this is the gospel I preached. Why can't 15:1 and 2 be what God gave him, and 15:3 be that real nice formalization of it if 99% of all the New Testament scholars who are writing today are correct? Why couldn't Paul...
They're not.
Okay.
They don't see a gross anachronism staring them in the face. Paul is giving creeds and traditions?
Sure.
This is way... If it's really Paul, it's way too early for that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If Paul says in Galatians...
Richard, what do you think... This could keep going on forever on
right.
this topic here. What do you think?
I've tried to get in a couple times, and
yeah,
I didn't want to talk over you.
It's only your program, Richard.
Right. But, I mean, you're the guest. I was just letting you,
you're
you guys talk.
You're very kind.
Thing is, if Paul says in Galatians that nothing was added to him, yet he goes in 1 Corinthians, is sharing something that was added to him, then I see the contradiction that Bob is talking about.
But what is he adding? What has
the
kerygma, Galatians
the formalized creed. And I don't see also the analogy was used that, you know, you have to get a bachelor's before you get a master's. It sounds like we're saying that Paul got his bachelor's from God went on to other people and got a master's.
I understand. That's a good point. But I still am not seeing how has he expanded 1 Corinthians 15 beyond, I mean, the gospel's the gospel, right? He defines the gospel earlier in Galatians chapter 1, plus Romans 1, Romans 10, many passages in the so-called authentic Pauline epistles. He defines the gospel. I don't see anything in 1 Corinthians 15 that's different. It's the
that's
same
my
gospel.
Point exactly. And he didn't get it from human beings, whereas in 1 Corinthians 15 he says he did.
And here's a question I have.
Okay.
Who is to say that the creed that Paul is giving is not one that he formalized himself from what God gave to him?
Well, because you have to make sense of those words, which are the Greek equivalent of the Aramaic for passing on tradition. Now, whatever else
right.
you want to say, Paul at least had to believe. But Paul had to, you know, you have to say Paul thought that he was telling the truth. And in 1 Corinthians, when he uses those words, as he does in 1 Corinthians 11, I gave you that which I also received, those are the formal terms for passing on tradition.
Yeah,
except that Paul is saying he's passing on tradition.
Right? Yeah, I think there's a number of earmarks here to show that this is tradition. He does, like Gary said, he uses I delivered to you what I received, and then there are non-Pauline words that are used in there. There is the possible Aramaic Cephas, which would seem that it goes back perhaps to an Aramaic original. You've got parallelism, this long, short thing where Paul says Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures,
right,
and that he was buried, and that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared.
Okay. Richard, what I was suggesting is,
and
Bob's
then the charisma
right
thing.
Bob is right. Paul got this from Jesus, not from the men. But what I'm suggesting is, Paul does not shy away from stating what, I'll just couch my terms very carefully, what scholars today think are early formalized statements. I mean, including Rudolf Bultmann, the arch skeptic, I think is something like that, is what Bob identified him with earlier. But I mean, Romans 1, 3, and 4, Romans 10, 9, Romans 4, 25, 1 Corinthians 15, 1 Corinthians 11. There are dozens of these believed to be formalized statements in the New Testament. It would make sense that in an oral culture where it has been estimated that 90% of Jesus' hearers were illiterate, it makes sense that you would tell, that you would have pithy, shorter statements, that you would tell stories like the parables, so people can take these things home. So
right,
it makes all the difference in the world. It seems to me that if these earliest apostles are preaching one-liners, died for our sins according to the Scriptures, buried, rose again from the dead, if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God's raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. Little things like that that you can hear and remember, it makes sense that that's the catechetical. Bob, we might be putting too big a word in that when we say catechism, but I mean, if that's the earliest teaching the apostles handed on, I would totally agree with you, Paul saying, I got this from the Lord, but I don't understand how he couldn't use the form of other eyewitnesses who gave the exact same data. That's the point of Galatians 2, 6, and 2, 9, and 10, that we share the same data.
All right, but you're saying that there are non-Pauline words being used in there.
Absolutely.
And it also seems that that could be evidence that, as Bob has argued, that that's actually a post-Pauline interpolation.
Okay. Let's talk about that for a second. Bob, if I understand you correctly, Bob, you prefer that we read straight from 15:2 to 15:12.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we should deduct, in a sense, if we want Paul, we should deduct verses 3 through 11.
Yes.
Okay. I've read your stuff. You give different thoughts about this, but one of them I'd like to ask you about when the very next authentic verse for you, 15:12. When Paul goes right from this gospel he preached and he ends it, the very next thing he says, 15:12, is that he says, we preach this to you, we. In the next few verses, 12, 13, 14, 15, if it is preached that Christ was raised from the dead, and then the next verse, 13, next verse, 14, our preaching is useless, 15, we would be false witnesses. Who's doing the? If he says in verse 15, 1 and 2, when I came to you, this is the gospel I preached, you either believe it or you don't. If you believe it, you're Christian. If not, you're not. The very next thing he says is, this is the gospel we preached to you. Now, I have two questions. Who are the we and the our that he goes immediately into without an explanation? But more interestingly, doesn't the we preached in 12 and 14 modify the this is what we preach, and this is what you believed in 15:11, one of the verses that you throw out?
Not necessarily. Paul, called by the will of God to be an apostle of Christ Jesus and our brother Sosthenes. Plus, right at the beginning, that could be the we. Paul constantly, in all these letters, alternates between I and we,
sure,
depending on whether he's thinking of his nominal collaborators. But
I guess what I'm asking is, sure, that could be. We
and also, of course, a little later, he says Apollo, Cephas, whoever it was, you know,
right,
we build on each other's work. So
which,
he may,
by the way, we're right back to the beginning. That shows you he did not mind talking about them and what they preach, because they're all preaching the same thing. But my question is a little more about the words. He says, we preached 12, 14, but 11 is, this is what we preach, and this is what you believe. All I'm saying is, I'm not saying you can't explain it. I'm just saying 12 and 14 and 15 are a lot better fit on 11 than they are on 2.
Let me make sure I get these numbers right.
Yeah, let me say it 12. Again. 1 Corinthians 15, for our listeners, 1 Corinthians 15, verses 12, 14, and 15, if it is preached, 12, our preaching, 14, we, 15. I'm saying the we and the hour who are preaching in verse 12 is much closer to the we preach in verse 11 than it is this is my preaching in verses 1 and 2.
Well, I don't think so. Verse 12 says, now if Christ is preached as raised from the dead.
Correct. And then he goes right into...
That's neutral. Somebody's okay. Preaching him.
But then look at verse 14. Look at verse 14. And if Christ has not been raised, our preaching. It's plain that the preaching is ours. I'm just saying, I agree with you.
That's 1 Corinthians all told, Apollos
right.
And Cephas and all
right.
That stuff from earlier chapters.
I'm saying you can go from a singular to a plural. That's okay. I'm just saying, doesn't 12, 13, 14, 15 make a nice continuous statement from 11? This is what we, and if you read back a couple verses, it's just that's the apostles. We're all talking about the appearances of Jesus. Whether you hear it from Peter, you're going to hear the same story you hear from me. He says in verse 11, we preached. It seems to me that a hand-in-glove kind of deal, it can mean Apollos and Peter and the others, but it seems like the we and our of 12 through 15 who are doing the preaching is the we who are doing the preaching in verse 11, the exact previous verse.
Well, yeah, but you see, that's also whoever we're talking about in the rest of the book. He's always saying Apollos, Cephas, any of us, you know, we're merely God's co-workers.
Right.
I mean, either way, it's a reference back to the same idea.
Right, but I guess what I'm asking you, Bob, is it easier to go back to earlier chapters and find the we, or is it easier to go in the previous verse and see not only the word we, but the word preach? In other words, why do I have to go back several chapters when I can go back one verse, a verse that you say Paul never had at his disposal?
It's a toss-up. It would work either way.
I don't think it's a toss-up.
One of the places I perceive a conflict, but I don't think it especially links it. In fact, I just begin to suspect that it's a redactional theme where things are repeated to provide a hook to hang the successive narrative back onto after the interruption of the interpolation.
If it is a redactional hook to say, hey, I can write like Paul writes, if it's a which the guy did a lousy
job.
Just for
the sake of continuity.
Right, okay, if he does that. Now, you've allowed in your 1995 article, I'm quoting from you here, I freely admit the lack of direct textual evidence, quote unquote, and then just a few lines later, this one, the case can never be more than an unverifiable speculation,
right,
quote unquote.
Right.
Now, this is your interpolation.
Sure.
Okay, if there's no textual evidence, because I think you already
either
know that
way,
article,
there are no copies of anything.
Right. Well, okay, but as soon as we get those early copies, say the Chester Beatty papyri.
Too late. It would have been done before then.
Right, guys, let me jump in here real quick, because we got about 15 seconds on the air still. To say, tune in next week. We're going to have Dennis McDonald talking about his books, The Homeric Epics and the Gospel of Mark, and Does the New Testament imitate Homer?
Jeez, why are you having nobody's like me on this thing when you can get him? Sheesh.
Yeah.
Boy, that's nice.
Sorry, Bob.
You should have these guys talking with him.
We are a little hard on you, Bob, but you know what?
I'm just saying, boy, McDonald, there's a star. You guys ought to be locking horns with him.
Well, we're not the producer, but when they called us, they said, how about Bob? And I said, you know what? I haven't talked to Bob for 20 years. He and I have tried to hook up for dialogues. And you're known for saying this stuff. But as you also note, almost nobody else says this.
That's true. Yeah.
That doesn't make you a loser. Doesn't make you wrong. I'm just saying it's probably an indication it's a long shot. By the way, Richard, are we still on?
No, I disconnected us from the live feed, but we're still recording.
So we'll still be on. Whoever downloads will get all.
Yeah, whoever downloads can get this.
Right. Well, that means our time's worthwhile, right?
Right. Absolutely. Okay.
Right. No, Bob, I'm not disparaging you. I know.
No,
your voice,
no, I don't think so.
You're a voice out there in the wilderness, but sometimes voices in the wilderness are right. I'm just saying.
Just like John the Baptist, hallelujah.
Well, you even look like John the Baptist.
I look more like Herod the Great.
Herod the Great. There you go. But Bob, I mean. Earlier, you know, you're making comments real early on, things like, well, darn it, I don't think anybody sees this. They think they have to defend this or that. I don't know, Bob. The kind of guys I read, start with Boltmann, the kind of guys I read, they don't think they have to defend anything. And Boltmann would surely not be afraid to take your view if he thought it was warranted.
Well,
Elaine
comes
Hagel
close
not
to
be afraid
it. He
to
says,
take
this
view.
Does not fit the context. What the heck is Paul doing here?
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Elaine Pagels, the voting of the Jesus Seminar, Gerrit Ludemann, Rudolf Boltmann. You know, the list could go on and on here for a long time.
All too timid and controlled by the plausibility structure of the guild. The magisterium says certain things, and, you know, you can have seven authentic epistles of Paul. Well, those are inviolable.
I guess what I'm saying is, you know these guys, none of them is afraid. I mean, for crying out loud, Gerrit Ludemann says these things are hallucinations. They're not afraid to... They're not afraid.
He's mired in 19th century rationalism.
Yeah, yes, he does. And the guys he quotes are his star witness is a 1910 psychologist, as I recall, which is a little
what a mistake.
But anyway, my point is, he wouldn't be afraid to say that if they thought they were good arguments and these traditions
probably
are
probably never occurred to him.
I'm sorry?
It's probably never occurred to him.
Well, but wait a minute. There have been discussions of your thesis. Right.
Well, actually, I don't want to take credit for it. I can think of about eight people that said the same thing before I did. They just never gave reasons for it.
Well, I understand. I looked at your list of eight people, and some of them are a little bit anachronistic. One of them said it a century ago, and
those like Arthur Droves, and this guy's very sharp. He's just given the cold shoulder.
Well, he could be, and then you said to somebody in one of your articles, you said Bruno Bauer was here before me. You didn't tell people Bruno Bauer was writing 150 years ago. That doesn't make him wrong. I'm just saying most of us think Bruno Bauer is wrong in many or most of the things he did, but Boltmann wouldn't be. Boltmann comes out of that school, the Bauer-Strauss school, and he wouldn't be afraid to say...
Well, I can only say he has already retreated from the ground that F.C. Bauer already had conquered, showing that Paul couldn't have written any but the Hauptbriefe. Boltmann's already stapled back on three more. Well, F.C. Bauer repudiated Bruno Bauer, and I think without good reasons.
Yeah, I'm just saying, Bob, the only thing I'm saying is most of the folks who are down on your end of the scale, and even your colleagues at the Jesus Seminar...
Oh, they're all way too conservative.
Okay, well...
Indeed.